Hello everyone, my name's Liam and I'm here with my co-host Pedro.
Hello!
We'd like to welcome you to episode 17 of MTG in 3D. Our other co-host Arthur will be hopefully joining us very, very shortly indeed. So today we think it's about time, being 17 episodes into our show, that we start to talk about stuff that's in the cube. And typically this would take the structure of, hey, we're going to talk about white cards today. But Pedro's had, in my opinion, rather a better idea. So I guess, Pedro, do you want to talk to our dear listeners about what your plan is?
Yeah, we got some feedback from you guys and girls who listen to this show about having some episodes that go into cube construction in more detail. What are our choices? What are our favorite cards? And like you said, usually this is done by color. We are going to try a different and we hope more holistic approach. We will look at the cube as a whole, but we are going by converted mana cost. So today we are going to talk about 0 and 1 drops. We are going to see and discuss some strong plays on curve. We can look at the differences between colors by their choice of, in this case, 1 drops. And we think this is a cool way to try to approach this problem. We actually have some shout-outs. This idea did not come from thin air. The first shout we have to give is from someone we only know as Kobe Cube, guy who used to post in the MTGS Cube forums, who started some power rankings for each converted mana cost. Second shout-out is to Jason Galvan. You gave us this idea when we talked a few months ago. You suggested we do some top 8 or top 10 lists for each converted mana cost.
And yeah, this isn't going to be that, but it certainly inspired what we're going to do.
The seed of the idea is there. And the third shout is to Monsieur Henri Lebeg for devising his mathematical theory of integration in the early 20th century.
I'm not going to pretend I knew what that was until you explained it to me. So let's just make sure that's linked in the show notes. So I guess that we're going to attempt to sort of follow a kind of rough template, see how that pans out. And we're going to try and stick to that when we start to discuss higher mana costs as well, right?
Yeah, that's the plan at least.
And I suppose our listeners, you guys can let us know in terms of if you think the template should change, what sort of bits we should discuss more, which bits you don't want to hear so much of, and we'll see how it all goes. It's kind of experimental, but we'll go with it. So, I mean, 1 drop's in the cube and 0 drops. We do want to add at this point, before we start getting into any sort of depth, we're going to talk about power in a dedicated episode anyway, right?
Yeah, that's our plan. We promised you that a few months ago. We will talk about power at length and at depth. And so let's just get this out of the way. Mox Emerald, Mox Jet, Mox Ruby, Mox Pearl, Mox Sapphire, Soul Ring. Absolutely the strongest plays you can get at 0 or 1. There's Mana Crypt as well, right?
Yeah, Mana Vault, Mana Crypt. Okay,
these are obviously very powerful. We're not skipping them, but we are going to talk at length about these cards in the future. Let's just get this out of the way. They are very, very powerful. They are above everything else we are going to discuss. So with that out of the way, we can go into more interesting discussion, we hope.
I think that leads us into another category that you suggested to talk about. So there's some of the optimal turn one plays can be power, but many people don't run powered cubes. And if they do, they may exclude fast mana. And sometimes even in a powered cube, more often than not, you don't have that sort of thing on turn one.
Yeah.
So depending on what your deck's overall goal is, what are some of the best early plays? So we're thinking what sort of 1 drops sort of most potent early on in the game on turn one. I mean, there must be a few examples we can discuss in depth.
Yeah, there are. The idea is, one of the things we intend to discuss is what are very strong plays that you can, the strongest plays you can make on curve turn one. Stuff that if you see across the table from you, you just go, oh, this is going to be tough. There are a few examples. One that comes to mind is Mother of Runes in white.
Yes.
So why is this a strong turn one play?
Obviously, once you've got the thing about turn one is it's almost a unique point in the game, whereby if you're on the play, your opponent doesn't generally have an opportunity to react.
Apart from your personal favorite in Mental Misstep?
Yeah, there are, I mean, Force of Will, if there are situations, I suppose you may pitch another blue card to counter a crucial one drop, depending on the rest of your game plan, how things look. But yeah, certainly Mental Misstep is a really, really good answer to those early aggro drops. We'll go on to talk a bit more about aggro starts in a minute. But certainly Mother of Runes is one of those ones where unless you land and then bolt it immediately, it protects itself. And it protects your further investments down the line for no sort of additional investment in itself at all. So I think you're right to say that's particularly strong as a turn one play, but I think it goes without saying that that's a good card at any point in the game.
Yeah, but that shields down moment turn one is very important.
Yeah, I like that expression, shields down is spot on.
You mentioned Lightning Bolt. We will go into one mana removal in a few minutes, but that's one of the reasons Mother of Runes is so good, is that it just, you need very cheap removal to interact with it.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
absolutely.
It shuts down lots of cards in your deck.
Sorry, I mean, it is particularly good on the play, but it's still good on the draw as well. I mean, we can say the same for, in general, a suite of cards here, discard.
You're talking about Thoughtseize and Duress and Inquisition of Kozilek?
Yeah, and even things like Despise if you run a little bit deeper.
So these are also powerful turn one plays. Not only you have a great deal of choice your opponent at that point will have a full grip of cards. You can absolutely wreck their gameplay. And you also get full information before you start playing. So I think these also qualify as very strong turn one plays.
Absolutely. And there's usually, whatever your deck may be, there's usually a sort of effect that you really want to avoid at all costs. If you're piloting an aggro deck, for example, it's really, really great if you know your opponent's playing some Wraths in their deck or some awkward planeswalkers like Gideon Jura is a bit of a nightmare or Jace the Mind Sculptor, to sort of preemptively strip those out of their hand, because once those have been played, they are, you know, in the case of the Planeswalker, it's going to have some major effect on the battlefield already, and it's going to be a downside harder to get rid of that.
And not only that, is discard is one of Black's best answers to some of the stuff you said, like powerful enchantments and Planeswalkers. Okay, Black also has Hero's Downfall, but...
That's true, but I mean, certainly when you mention enchantments and artifacts, Black has a bit of a tough time dealing with those once they're in play. It's a case of either ignoring them, going for the throat, or you just get them out of hand early on, and that's probably the cheapest and most efficient way of doing it.
Also, so, the information it gets you.
Yeah.
What other strong, very strong turn plays do we get? If you sit down with your sweet deck with lots of synergies, and you see turn one Goblin Guide across from you.
Yeah, that's. I suppose the only time you're going to be happy is if you took a sort of poor hand, maybe land poor and hope to top deck something. But that's, as far as quick aggro starts go, Goblin Guide is probably the fastest one. I mean, in general, out of all of the aggro one drops, so we can maybe go a bit more and talk about the variety of those in different colors. But that's probably the one of the better turn one drops.
Oh, absolutely. In the whole cube, I would say.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, if you see something like, say, Fire Drinker Satyr or Stromkirk Noble, it's not necessarily a sign, but if you see, like, third or fourth pick Goblin Guide, you know the deck has to be open, the red aggressive deck, right?
Yes, I think that's fair to say. I mean, it's such a high pick for any aggressive deck, and it's a good sign to lead you into red as a secondary color if you first picked a few aggro things in other colors as well. It's that good.
I mean, the drawback is real. It's not, the card has a drawback. The fact that you have to give some potential extra lands to your opponent can come back to haunt you, but the haste is so strong in that card.
Yeah, it's a beefy one drop, and then of course haste and two power is unprecedented on the one drop.
Yeah.
So it gets you really off to a flying start with any sort of aggro deck. Yeah, and that's a card you can quite happily, charge into defenses, get it killed off. You don't really worry too much about that. I think, that's definitely certainly a very good turn one play. I think there's another one in red that bears mentioning is Faithless Looting. I found is often an excellent turn one.
Oh, yeah. If you have a dedicated reanimator deck or some deck with lots of graveyard synergies, it can be a very strong turn one play. Say you bin your Fatty and a Bloodgust, for instance.
Yeah,
it
absolutely.
Can signal a very strong deck, and that is a very strong opening play in that deck.
It can also make a sort of mediocre or slightly awkward opening hand very takeable. So you just use the first turn just to clean things up without having to mulligan. No, if you've got something that looks good for the second turn, I'm very
you are mulligan in some sense, but yeah.
Yeah, but if you've got that synergy there, then it's
you can recoup that card disadvantage. Yeah.
And of course the and Tomb as well, going back to black. That's another example in a deck with the synergies. You get your creature and your investment in the graveyard as soon as possible, and there's multiple cards that will allow you to play that turn too. So we're talking things like Reanimate, Animate Dead, Exhume, things like Dance of the Dead as well if you run that. So that's another example. So I'm happy to report that Arthur's literally just this second rejoined us on the Skype chat. So, hey, welcome, Arthur.
Hi, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, we're glad to add you to the conversation. So we were just discussing particularly potent turn one plays. We're going to discuss cards that are really limited to the early game and cards that are sort of always excellent later on. We're just sort of really talking about stuff that really gives you a good chance of winning when you lay it down early. So I know there's a card you particularly wanted to mention on this front, which is Sensei's Divining Top. Am I right?
It's not maybe that crucial, but early play, but I guess it's quite strong if you play in the first turn. You get to filter all your first turn's draws, so I think it's quite a strong play. And obviously you can also dodge almost all the counter spells or anything that can actually destroy Sensei Divining Top, because it's really a strong card to...
Yeah,
it's really difficult to play around.
A bit like Recurring Nightmare in terms of being sort of easy, an easy card to dodge effect removal.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The thing about Sensei is it's strong, but it's strong in a subtle way. I mean, it's not the slam dunk it is in EDH, for instance, but the tiny advantages it gives you turn after turn after turn still make it a very strong turn one play, and like you said, you can dodge counter spells, and as soon as you start getting these small advantages, the better it should work for you. It's subtle, but I also believe it's a very strong turn one play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a bit like a sort of grease that makes every deck run a little bit smoother.
Yeah.
And it's not one of those, like, Faithless Losing. It can sort of slightly improve your hand quality if you had something that was a little bit questionable in the first instance.
It gives you some control, at least.
Yeah, sure.
Other strong turn one plays. This is a bit conditional, but you have Delver of Secrets.
Wow.
Yeah.
If it flips,
obviously.
So this isn't a card I'm currently running. I did test it way back, and maybe now that Spells Master is more of a consistent archetype for most people with the advent of things like Monastery Mentor and Young Pyromancer.
Yeah.
Is this a card you would recommend?
I wasn't running it when I was at 360. I think, my blue wasn't that aggro oriented, so it wasn't that good of a card, but in larger cubes I would definitely recommend it, and maybe you can try it in smaller cube.
The thing about Delver, I honestly believe he's expendable. I mean, you don't have to play Delver at all, but if you're trying to push a Spells Matter theme or something like that, and I believe that some cubers are interested in doing that, with the, like you said, the printing of Monastery Mentor or stuff like Ojutai Exemplars, Young Pyromancer, Monastery Swift Spear. It's really part of a package, and Delver, as a part of that package, is a strong card. And if it flips, I mean, it's a very strong card.
Probably the strongest one drop creature, if it flips. Probably the, I mean, aggro creature. I mean,
it's if it flips, yeah. Goblin Guide is very scary. I'll be frank.
Yes, but I mean, Goblin Guide, it's easier to, I mean, to block.
Yeah.
Really, turn one Delver that flips is almost okay. Do you have a removal? Because
you better hope you have.
Exactly.
Yeah. Do you have anything else to add?
Well, I have two or three. I think are great turn one plays. Speaking of that aggro theme,
yeah.
One of those would be Stormkirk Noble.
Yeah.
You actually really want to play that the first turn because you really want it to grow.
Yeah.
And if you play turn one, if your opponent has no creature turn one, then it's really, really fast, quickly getting out of control.
Yes. That's a good point. Yeah. I agree. Another one would be land tax, I assume. You really want to play this turn one.
Well, I wasn't thinking about that one, but obviously you want to play turn one.
Yeah.
Yeah, land tax is one of the most broken spells in the entire game. I mean, even this is quite easy to get a 9-for-1 card advantage. You know, this is easy to trigger three times. You really want to be, you know, contrary to some cards you mentioned earlier, where you maybe want to be on the play, like Mother of Runes. This one you want to be on the draw. So this is going to help you to actually trigger this every turn. But this is very much a card of a very low ceiling if you play it later in the game.
Yeah. It drops off very fast. Sort of like Black Vise?
Yes.
Yeah, also. That's probably the most well-known classic example of something that you really, really want to get out of the way early. I mean, land tax, at least you can manipulate your land count comfortably later on if you do top deck it, just to thin your deck out. You know, strip three cards every turn just by keeping your lands above, you know, below the threshold, whatever your opponent's doing, if you can afford to do that. But Black Vise is pretty common for it to do nothing late game.
Yeah,
so it's very binary.
Yes. I mean, with land tax, I've seen many times playing land tax the first turn, the opponent just saying, okay, turn two, I don't play a land. I don't want you to.
Yeah.
And they're not wrong.
And they're not wrong, but I mean, think about that. It's probably against any law of magic.
Yeah.
Not playing a land drop early on, but people are that scared of land tax and do that. So
maybe if you're playing just a handful of Goblin Guides and Zergos and Tormented Heroes and stuff, then I guess they could probably get away with it. But it's I haven't seen it too many times actually pay off. It's certainly very risky.
Yeah, but, well,
like a one mana stone rain if you've done that.
There are two last cards in this category that I think are really strong turn one plays. It's Enclave Cryptologist.
Yes.
It's one of the best looters in queue. By looter, we mean something that allows you to draw a card and discard a card named after Merfolk Looter. That was the first card with this type of effect. The two strongest cards in this category are Lutheril Core and Enclave Cryptologist.
Yeah, if you're not considering Dark Faden.
Okay.
You mean just in blue, right?
Yes, okay, obviously, yeah. That's what I mean.
Yeah, sure.
But keeping it just in blue, Looter is a strong turn one play, but the Cryptologist is particularly strong turn one because it allows you to start looting turn two if you level it up.
Yeah,
that's very true. It's a significant investment of your first two turns, but you do get a return on that on the second turn, as you say.
Yes.
Whereas most looters won't give you that.
That's exactly my point. Also, I would say that other cards that you really want to play turn one. Not right now. We're not necessarily talking about the absolute strongest turn one plays, but these are very strong turn one plays nonetheless. Stuff like Figure of Destiny and
Warden of the First Tree, I assume.
Warden of the First Tree, Student of Warfare.
Yes, yes.
These kind of level up cards.
They're sort of universally good. I mean, of course they can attack for two or three on, or even three with First Strike on the second turn, but if you do have the mana later on, then they're far redundant.
They're not bad in later turns. They're good mana sinks.
Compared to the average one drop, they're pretty amazing to top deck turn six or something.
And the last card we wanted to mention is any mana elf.
Yeah, so I guess ramp we could almost talk about as a group on itself.
We can do that. Yeah,
I mean there's obviously many mana elves that most cubes are going to be running. You've got three basic mana elves. You've got Llanowar, Flinthorn, and Elvish Mystic. You've got Arbor Elf, who's the same but different. Sometimes he's better, sometimes not. And then birds, Draugr Tree Speaker, which is like Sol Ring Elf.
Hierarch.
Hierarch, of course.
The Elf of the Shadow, also Alves in Pilgrim if you run larger cube, probably.
Yeah.
But Elves of Deep Shadow, and so you've got one Alves of those as a white. As a white, blocking the damage.
I would have said also, that's maybe more a card that, well, in cube it doesn't pay off that much in the first turn, but can, depending on how you play it, you have also Deathrite Shaman.
Yeah, so we've got a whole group of those cards that are sort of better late on that we can come back to.
Yeah. We can come back probably to that later.
Yeah, we've got a few of those to talk about. Yeah, I mean, just staying on ramp for the time being. I think you also
have Utopia Sprawl.
Yes, and Wildgrave.
What's the other one from Alpha? I'm missing the name.
Wildgrave?
Yes, that one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so these are almost as crucial to a ramp deck's curve as an aggressive 2-power 1-drop is to an aggro deck's curve. And of course, I think you need a good number, because of course, as we discussed, there are several colours that do good aggro 1-drops, but only really one colour that does good ramp 1-drops.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Outside of the powers we discussed at the beginning of the episode.
One thing you'll notice during this series is that we hope that this sheds a light on the importance of curving out and building your cube with the curve in mind. The mana elves are particularly important because it just throw this out of the window and allow you to play 3-drops turn 2. And we'll get to that, on how that can change the choice for green cards. But I think it's very important. It has a pretty interesting effect, because you can think of green 3-drops as sort of 2-drops and green 4-drops as sort of 3-drops with a small investment. And that's something to keep in mind, I would say.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. I was about to ask you to comment on how green curves out. As our resident ramp expert, so you've done that for us. Thanks.
okay.
But no, it's very true. So, I mean, I think you need a good level of redundancy of these, because their importance to ramp is so high. And the fact that you can't leech them from other colours, you know, there's plenty of great aggro 1-drops in red and black and white. But really, there aren't many elsewhere.
Can you go, do you want to go into that? Talk about the importance of 1-drops for aggro decks, because it's a nice comparison to the mana elves.
I was saying, I still have a couple of
Very strong turn one plays?
Yes.
Okay, sorry, we jumped the gun.
if you just let me I think one of those, I get, for me, actually, it's the strongest one, but there's a couple of them.
Yeah.
The big one is actually Ancestral Visions.
Yeah, really want to play that turn
You want
one.
To play that turn one. Is like, say, you're playing, okay, you have 4 turns to really do something strong, because in 4 turns, the game will be mine.
And obviously Ancestral Recall in powered cubes.
But in turn one, Ancestral Recall is not that good, actually.
Yeah, I gotta agree with that.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't like it that much.
And you're going to end up discarding a bit. Although, unless you're, if you're in Reanimator, that's...
This is not vintage. Okay.
And Tom would be very, very good. One player. But the other one is actually not a one drop. But I think we can all agree it should count as a one drop. And
Fox
I'm talking
Diamond?
About... No, Library of Alexandria.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Obviously,
I mean,
yeah.
That's probably one of the best turn one you can have.
I gotta agree with that, yeah.
That should count as a one drop.
No, it does. Right before you arrived, we talked we talked about Moxen and Sol Ring.
Obviously.
And
I
we just said, okay, these are obviously very strong. They'll get their own episode. And we forgot to mention Library in that group. But yeah, indeed, Library is just absolutely an absolutely ridiculous turn one play.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it's never worse than a colorless land, and that's important to remember. I think it seems like a terrible top deck because you don't have access to the completely broken card drawing ability, but yeah, it's still a land. You know, it's but certainly if you want to get the effect, you want to be looking at that turn one. There's a few others on the topic of cards that you really have to play early, like Lantax, like Black Vice, and like Library of Alexandria.
Yeah.
And I'm going to lump all these together because they're sort of aggro one drops, and that will lead us into talking about that. Experiment
very
one.
Smoothly, I'm very
yes.
smooth.
Experiment one, Champion of the Parish, and Step Links are all other examples of that. I mean, if you want your Champion of the Parish to be more than a vanilla 1-1, which I would hope sincerely that you do if you're keeping it, then you want to be playing humans on top of it, like Experiment 1. And then if you're running an Evolve card that's a 1-1, you want to be playing subsequent creatures to buff it. And of course, Step Links, you need to get down early to take advantage of all your fetch lands. So, you know, that's probably the worst of the bunch when you top deck it late on. But I think the base performance when you play it early as a sort of 2-3 or even bigger is pretty fantastic. So I'd say that in my opinion it makes up for the higher level of variance.
I agree. But how about one drops in general? We talked about some of the stronger ones like Goblin Guide and
Yeah. So in terms of the
Noble.
But, the role of one drops.
Yeah, the role of one drops, of creature one drops in particular.
So explain about in an aggro deck. So Pedro, how many one drops do you want?
Okay, I want as many as I can get my hands on.
That's the correct answer.
Someone did the math on the internet or something. If you're playing an aggro deck, you want to finish the game, to close the game as soon as you can, before your opponent has a chance to react. So you are looking at the first, say, 4, maybe 5 turns of the game. You have a total of 15 mana, 10, say it's 4 turns. You have a total of 10 mana to spend.
Mm-hmm.
Your opponent has potentially a lot more than that. So you really have to make those 10 mana count. If you're not spending your mana turn 1, it's 10% of your total game plan that you're just wasting, and it's less damage you're getting through. So
yeah.
You really, 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 if you're playing an aggro deck, you really want to have a strong turn 1 play.
Think even proportionally more than 10%, because of course if you play a one drop, you're hitting every turn 2, turn 3, turn 4.
Yeah, and
exactly. So if you're playing a 3-drop on turn 4, that's probably acceptable. But you know, as you say, it highlights the importance of hitting your one drop. So to that end, you need a good number in your deck. So in a 40-card deck, I mean,
I don't remember the math exactly. It's easy to compute. But
yeah.
I think it's something like you need 7 one drops in your deck to be something like 90% to get a one drop in your opening hand.
Yeah, I think it came to somewhere between 7 and 8 one drops.
It's something like that. So if you need 7 to 8 one drops ideally in your aggro deck, you need to have a lot of one drops in your cube in order to have that many one drops in your deck. So you really need the redundancy. That's usually why some people, when they are ourselves included, people, when the set reviews come out and the new sets come out, they just say, yes, another 2-powered one drop. It's not like we're freaks and aggro freaks and we really like our 2-powered one drops over the 4 and 5 and 6 mana cards, which are obviously much more powerful. It's just that we want to have the type of redundancy in our aggro decks, and we know the importance of having that redundancy. So we need those early plays for our aggro decks.
Yeah, I think that's very well put. I mean, you want to be able to support ostensibly multiple aggro drafters at the table.
Yeah, I would say.
If you're playing a 4-person cube draft, for example, I say you want potentially to have 2 aggro drafters. Yeah, you would make potentially 2
at
mid-range drafters
one.
Or potentially 2 control drafters.
I would say at least. It depends on the paradigm you follow. You can think it's aggro, mid-range, and control. Wizards has a 4-bucket model or something.
And combo.
You have combo ramp somewhere in between. If you go by Patrick Chapin, there are 16 types of decks in Magic history. And
I think what many groups aim for is to have in a 4-person cube draft when people sit down, you've got 1 aggro, 1 control, 1 mid-range, and then a 4th deck that could be any one of those, or it could be a sort of combo deck.
That's reasonable.
I think that's what we sort of aim for. So potentially if the cards are right and the cards are kind, then you can do 2 aggro decks, but sometimes maybe you can't.
And I would say you want at least 2 strong aggro decks in an 8-person draft.
I would say that's got to be a minimum, yeah.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I think you have to keep the control decks in check, keep them honest.
Yeah, it's hard, and this is almost an episode by itself. But the thing is, if you start skimming on aggro one drops, you are doing a disservice to your more aggressive decks. And then what happens is usually control beats mid range. But it's aggro that beats control.
Yeah, it's the rock, paper, scissors paradigm.
So your cube sessions will most likely just turn out to be Dirtle Fests. There's nothing wrong with Dirtle Fests. It's just the thing that you don't... In my opinion, you don't want your gameplay, your usual gameplay, to be ramp, 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 counter, ramp, 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 counter, draw, threat, counter, threat, counter, threat, counter. This is the last fatty standing. Do you have an answer? No. Okay, I won. Do you really want all your... what beats this kind of deck?
Yeah, I think a savvy drafter would be able to game the system as well.
The thing is, who out-dirdles the dirdlers, you know?
Yeah,
is that what you're saying?
It's the age-old question, Pedro. I mean, you go into a draft, you know that maybe aggro is a bit deficient in a given cube. You can very much build around the knowledge.
Yeah.
You can build a very, very slow sort of control deck and gear against the mid-range matchup.
Do you happen to have any high-profile example you want to give us, Liam?
Of aggro one drops?
No, let's go with that.
Okay, we'll pick some particularly recent ones, I guess. So, I mean, we'll highlight one from each color that does one drops exceptionally well.
Yeah.
So White's got Soldier of the Pantheon. What does this card do? It's a 2-1 protection from multicolored that gains a life when someone plays a multicolored spell. So this card does a number of things well. It's also a human, which is good for a number of reasons. And it's a soldier, which might be relevant for some people as well. So you can see this is, you know, very efficient for the cost. There's no drawbacks. It can gain you a bit of incidental life, which is wonderful for the aggro mirror.
Yeah.
And it's going to randomly wall a bunch of powerful cards and removal.
It can help you somehow race against mid-range, for instance.
Yeah. You know, and this is an interesting card. I have had one example of a draft where I was I started off maybe looking at aggro, and I kind of got dragged into a sort of control shell, and I actually ended up playing this. And you know, to trade with two power attackers, gain a bit of incidental life, and you know, did a reasonable job. And it's something that, you know, subpar, but most other aggro one drops would not have made the cut remotely, whereas I was able to salvage something with this one.
Okay.
Arthur, do you have a example from red that you sort of care to discuss in particular or highlight?
In red for aggro spells, I would say maybe early spells, Reckless Wave can be a very good as early aggro.
That's an interesting choice. I know a lot of people have had not much luck with that. I mean, is that something that's been particularly strong for you?
Not that strong, but I think, I mean, I could obviously have chosen the 2/1 creatures for one mana. I guess it's the obvious choice, but it has a really interesting position with Reckless Wave. In aggro decks, if you play it early, it's a very good, it can be a very good card. 3/2 for one mana is actually quite strong.
Yeah, very much so.
But it's one of those cards that has some play during the entire game, really. There's all that game of flipping, unflipping that card from your opponents. I mean, even a bit later, it can be a 3/2 quite fast. Because there's, if you look at it, there's many times that you don't have a strong play and you just draw a land and pass a turn.
Yeah.
And that's a really easy way to flip it. And normally, if your opponent doesn't have many answers for it, there's a lot of times when you won't make a play just because you can keep that card in hand to unflip it later. So there's all that game. And
okay.
I find it kind of interesting, actually.
I will agree with you that it's a very interesting card, in particular in two axes. The first one is, we're just mentioning the dirtly controlled decks. This is one of the better cards that can punish the controlled decks. Because they really need to have a turn one play, whatever that is. Otherwise, this will flip and it will start getting lots of damage through very fast.
Exactly.
And the other, it's this will be a sort of a paradox, but I think that Reckless Wife it becomes worse and worse as you start making aggro better and better.
Actually, that's completely true. I completely agree with that.
Because then you play this turn one, you really want this to flip. So it can become a 3/2 attacker. So the savvy control or mid-range drafter will try to have a turn one play, even if he's not playing aggro. And that's an interesting choice for that. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's also one... I actually chose that card because it's probably one of the strangest aggro creatures, because you want to play it on turn one, so it can probably flip if your opponent has no turn one.
Yeah.
But then you cannot actually sacrifice your second turn just to flip that card.
Oh yeah.
So it's one of those cards that is that can be very good or sometimes actually terrible.
Yeah.
It's sort of cognitive dissonance there. Certainly,
yeah.
if you're running that, it's yeah, it's certainly a very interesting card, and it's got a layer of depth to people's game choices as well. So, and I suppose we can talk about black, which also has a great number of very good aggro one drops, and probably my favourite one of those is Blood-Soaked Champion, again from the most recent block, which is Khan of Tarkir for posterity.
Yeah.
And this is an interesting card as well. This is one that does have a drawback, being a 2/1 that can't block. But like Soldier of the Pantheon, it has some very interesting interactions. It can come back from the battlefield, so it supports a number of other decks. Do you want to talk a bit more about that, Petro?
I can, yeah. It would be my choice, honestly.
Yeah.
And let's look at the stats. So it has 2 power for 1 mana. That's exactly the type of stats you want on your aggressive 1-drop. But this... One comment I was going to make when you mentioned Soldier of the Pantheon, and I found it to be true about Bloodsoaked Champion and some other 1-drops, is that... And I'm starting to think this is intentional on the Wizards' part. You really want your 1-drop to have at least 2 power. Your aggressive 1-drop to have at least 2 power. Or have the condition to get 2 power.
So something, by that you mean something like Wolfbitten Captive?
Yeah, Wolfbitten Captive, Monastery Swift Spear, even Stormkirk Noble in some sense. But the 2 power for 1 mana is your baseline. Is your desired baseline.
Yes.
Okay. Notice how Wizards not only is printing a lot of creatures recently with those stats, but they are also trying to give it some extra utility, so you're not just playing with 1-mana 2/1s or 1-mana 2/2s with some drawback.
Absolutely.
Bloodsoaked Champion is a good example. It's it can't block, but it has an additional line of text. You can pay 2 mana to return it from your graveyard to the battlefield if you attack with a creature that turn. So you get some recursion, and that's something that can be found in historically in black in a lot of creatures, all the way back to Nether Shadow, I think it was the first one. Alpha, Nether Shadow, and there are lots, I'm missing the names. More recently, you have Bloodgust and Gravecrawler and cards like that. Yes. And that's cool because not only is a good card for your aggressive decks, it's also something you're willing to play in some deck with a sacrifice theme. If you have a Goblin Bombardment, or if you're playing with Smokestack or Braids.
Yeah, those are the sort of cards to combo with this in an aggro shell or in a mid-range shell.
But if you notice, you have even the new Dragon Hunter from the Dragons of Tarkir. It gives you some almost irrelevant, but you have a bit of extra utility. So you can block dragons. Yeah. You mentioned Soldier of the Pantheon. You have some extra upside against multicolored decks. Something like Mardu War Reaper.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems...
It's a 1-mana 2/1, but it's also incidental graveyard hate.
It's interesting in the way that the 1-drops have been differentiated between colors now. So I think green is not really getting 2 1-drops, so we can maybe find a source for the quote, but because to differentiate them from white's 1-drops, they'll be too similar. And white's 1-drops tend to be characterized nowadays by being 2-1 with a very minor additional benefit and no drawback. Black seems to have 2-1s and 2-2s where they have some sort of drawback, like not being able to block or come into play tapped, but they also have sometimes a substantial benefit. So they have sort of a drawback and a plus. So something like Gravecrawler or Diagraph Ghoul, which is a 2-2 enters tapped.
Even something like Gnarled Scarhide or Tormented Hero.
Yes. I was going to talk about that one.
Tormented Hero has this marginal upside that if you target it with a spell, which in cube mostly means Rancor.
That's...
and Angelic Destiny.
Maybe Mutagenic Growth.
Oh, yeah. We will talk about that. And Gnarled Scarhide, you can play it later in the game. But we can maybe start moving towards our next topic, which is 1-drops that are also good plays later in the game.
Yeah, or even better plays, and I think Gnarled Scarhide is probably in that category.
Yeah, let's start with Scarhide. Can you talk about it for a bit, Liam?
Yes, sure. So it's as we mentioned, it's a 2-1 with a minor drawback of not being able to block. It can be a significant drawback in the mirror match, but everywhere else it's not too relevant at all. And, of course, you can bestow on a creature to give it +2/+1 and the inability to block. So, of course, that's potentially awesome to buff one of your previously irrelevant one drops later in the game for 4 mana, or you can even use it in an offensive capacity by rendering one of your opponent's creatures unable to block itself. So it's a card that when you get to the late game, it's something that opens up more options besides just being a very solid one drop in its own right. So I think that's a great example of a good one drop, but it's better and better and better the later you go into the game.
Yeah. But even the quintessential example would be Mog Fanatic, although it's starting to become a little bit obsolete, I would say.
I guess.
It's something that's good to be played turn one, but it's something that has some uses later in the game as well.
Yeah, in terms of just finishing off a creature after combat and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not dead, like you said, Champion of the Parish, going back to that. Champion of the Parish, Step Lynx. I mean, if you draw this turn 8...
Yeah, it's kind of sad times.
And Black Vise as well.
On the other hand, something like Grim Larvamancer. Arthur, do you want to talk a bit about that one? I know you're a fan of that card.
Oh, well, I'm not that a fan, but...
Don't ruin our script, Arthur. Come on, please.
if people think we have a script at this point, we've
No.
Do you, Pedro?
Pedro has. He's just been reading off that, and it's all by chance that we've actually had a meaningful conversation. This complete coincidence. About the price of bacon in Saudi Arabia, you were saying, Arthur.
Well, apart that, I've never been a fan of red in Magic, even though I play mono red in Cube sometimes.
Okay,
that's weird, but
maybe you're the wrong person to talk about Grim Larvamancer. Petro, would you do the honors?
No.
Okay, so I've never been a fan of red in cubes, and no, I'm joking. Larvamancer, if you play Modern at all, you will notice how strong Larvamancer can be in a more aggressive environment. It gives you a lot of inevitability as the game goes on. It gives you a repeatable way to get 2 damage wherever you want, at the expense of some cards in your graveyard, but you're playing the cards anyway.
That's why it's not a great turn one play.
Yeah.
Of course, yeah.
Unless you're playing a hyper fast turn one fetch land, Gitaxian Probe, Thought Scour, turn two. You know the drill.
Actually, we'll have to come back to Gitaxian Probe, but carry on.
Yeah. And Larvamancer is a very strong play if you play, say, turn 3 with some cards in your graveyard. It's a very strong way to disrupt your opponent's early drops as well. And it also, while also giving you a lot of reach in your more aggressive deck. So this is really a card you don't... I mean, if you play it turn 1 under counter magic, that's fine. But if you want to grind your opponent's removal with your early creatures or something, and the point I'm trying to make, it's never a dead top deck.
That's the key thing. This is something that's going to have persistent value through the whole game.
If you draw your, even if you draw your Birds of Paradise on turn 8 or 9, it's not the same as drawing a land because you can chump block or something, but it's
carry a sword
very poor.
Or, yeah.
Something like Enclave Cryptologist that we mentioned earlier. If you play it turn 8, you have an awesome mana sink, and if you invest some mana into it, you're just drawing 2 cards a turn.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's good when your one drop gives you that option. You know, Arthur was mentioning Deathrite Shaman.
That's what I was going to get you to ask to talk about, Arthur. That's one of my personal favorites. Do you want to talk a bit about DRS?
Well, I mean, if you've played with that card in Modern while it was there,
short but sweet time.
I guess you should know how it works. It's was actually the usual turn one. Everyone was playing, okay, turn one, fetch, that's right, Shaman. Almost, I mean, it's either a ramp card. We talked about earlier about ramp card. I mean, in Cube, it's not as strong because we don't get as many lands in the graveyard. But it's still some sort of ramp card. Then it's it has the option to be Grim Levamancer.
Yeah.
You have some red with you. Some black, sorry. So it's very good in the late game because you can actually kill your opponent. And, well, you can also win two lives. I mean...
And it's also incidental graveyard removal, if you need it.
Incidental graveyard removal. It's also a very good blocker against aggro decks. So 1-2, I mean, it has 2 toughness, so...
Yeah, it has no right to have 2 toughness. I think we were all in agreement that this card would still be fantastic if it was a 1-1.
It wouldn't be good.
As a 1-1... I mean, I was going to say, carry on.
No, don't say carry on. Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is another quintessential card. It's a decent one drop, but even better late in the game, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, in Cube, that's the main difference with Modern. I mean, in Modern, you want to play that turn one because there's going to be a ton of fetches.
Yeah.
Sure. But in Modern, that's not the case, actually.
You mean in Cube?
In Cube, you're probably not going to be able to use it on turn 2 as a mana dog. So really, you prefer it really as a Grim Levamancer.
Yeah.
Or to gain life, but generally you want to deal 2 damages. That's probably the main.
It's sort of a 1 mana planeswalker, right?
Kind of.
And, well, it can be really useful against some recurring decks.
Yeah.
That play with the graveyard, but...
Of course.
That would be more a sideboard option.
And what incidental graveyard hate is just so awesome in Cube when it comes up like this, so I think you make a very good point, Arthur. Mardu Wayreaper being another one drop that has that ability as well.
I mean, you're not... Or Dryad Militant. I mean, that's...
Oh, yeah.
Gotcha. Oh, we forgot the hybrids.
No, we talked about Figure of Destiny already.
Yeah, but we haven't talked about Rakdos Cackler, which is another very strong turn one play. But, yeah. Dryad Militant.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I mean, that's the same thing. It's a card... You're not playing it for its grave, for the graveyard hate. I mean, you might side it in if you have it on your deck... And you don't support it really much, and you need some graveyard hate, but you're not playing it for that reason. It's a very, very good aggro creature. I mean, it's a Savannah Lion, one of the most iconic one drops we had.
Yeah.
And it also has that incidental graveyard hate that makes it so much better.
I agree.
Yeah, I think additional layer of interest on a bland 2-1 is always really welcome, because you know it's a much more exciting thing to open in a pack than a Savannah Lions. I mean, nostalgia notwithstanding, when you've got an additional ability and maybe that will come into play, maybe not. So I think it goes back to what you're saying about the new age of 2-power 1 drops being more than a vanilla 2-power 1 drop.
Yes.
Yeah. It's cool. Yeah, like we said, it's very cool that Wizards is giving something extra to our early play so they can be reasonable throughout the game. But there are also some cards that are not necessarily turn one plays, but it's crucial sometimes that they are one drops just so they can fill out your curve later in the game.
Yeah, that's a very, very valid point. So to go back to your philosophy of spending all of your mana, like the Sly philosophy, do you want to give some examples of those?
I mean, if you want to start with Sly, you have your Lightning Bolt, your Fire Bolt, your burn spells. I mean, it, like we mentioned, it's important to have some cheap interaction with your opponent. Firebolt and Lightning Bolt can kill early creatures that really need to be killed ASAP.
Like Mother of Runes.
Like Mother of Runes. Swords to Plowshares, it's another example.
Yeah, so all of the one mana removal, which is...
Not necessarily Path to Exile.
Yeah, that's an interesting...
Because
sometimes.
If you really need it, it's cheap interaction, but it's not a turn one play. Because then you're giving your opponent free ramp, and they can play a 3-drop turn 2. That's not necessarily what you want to do. But you have all this cheap interaction. Your Force Spike, your Mana Tithe. They become worse as the game goes on, but you can still catch people with them. I once countered the Burst Lightning turn 10 or something. And actually, Burst Lightning is another good one drop because of the flexibility.
Yeah.
Like we talked a lot in previous episodes, but you would not be playing Shock, but having a Shock that can double up as a very legitimate burn spell later in the game is a good way to ensure your one drops stay relevant.
Absolutely.
And then you have the cards that
I think Stifle, another one. Turn one in very rare cases, usually when you see a fetch land.
You really need to get your opponent fetch land with it. Yeah.
Yeah. But if not turn one, then it continues to hold value because a lot of the creature drops and cubes tend to be predicated on their end of the battlefield abilities, and that's where the value comes from.
Other cards that are relevant at almost all points in the game are some stuff like the blue cantrips. Ponder, Preordain, Brainstorm. I mean, they are very good turn one, because you can set up your place for the next turns.
Yeah, especially Ponder and Preordain turn one are excellent.
Yeah, but if you top deck your Preordain turn 8, it's not a dead draw.
Okay with that. And I guess we should also talk at that point about Gitaxian Probe.
Oh, yeah.
Which also we mentioned earlier, support for the Spells Matter archetype, and that's another good example that can help benefit those decks.
Yeah, Probe is very strong turn one because of the information you get. But
precisely,
it's not,
and it's free.
You can just, sometimes it's in the middle of the game, you want to see if it's safe to attack, or you want to plan two turns ahead. It's another very good, say, turn three, turn four play. It's a free card in your graveyard, and I believe Gitaxian Probe is becoming more and more playable in at least medium-sized cubes.
I am playing it at the moment in my small cube, and it's been pretty good. I mean, it's almost like makes your deck a 39-card deck in a way.
Yeah.
And it gives you information. It fuels a few of those random spells that we like.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something extra to do on turn one.
Yeah.
And actually, it's a card I'm really happy to play probably later in the game, because there's so many cards that can benefit from it. Like, as you mentioned earlier, the Spells Matter deck, the Storm deck, all those decks. All those decks, you actually don't really need it early on. You want to upgrade your spells count later, but...
Yeah.
And it's one of those cards that always a good card in the early turns, but actually it also matters a lot in the late game. I will tend to play it more and more in the later turns than early ones right now.
The extreme case is probably Rancor, right? You're not going to play Rancor turn one.
I cannot conceive playing that turn one ever, really.
But the fact that you have all these spells we mentioned, and the tutors as well, Enlightened Tutor, Mystical Tutor, Vampiric Tutor, all these cards, it's sometimes you have holes in your mana curve, and the fact that you can get either cheap plays or cheap interaction, like some removal spells even, Dismember.
Right, yeah.
Swords to Plowshares, the Lightning Bolt. I'm missing some.
That genre of stuff.
It's very important, I would say, that all these spells are live at all points in the game, and I feel like this utility. Oh, of course, something like Skull Clamp.
Well, yeah. I was gonna mention that probably a bit later, but yes.
Yeah, Skull Clamp is live at all points in the game.
Yeah, I'm happy that is a turn one play.
And your opponent is dead, but
mana spare.
Yeah.
I mean, speaking of Skull Clamp, and there's a couple of decent one mana artifact answers, which is generally, I think, more important than people give credit for in powered cubes.
Oh, yeah.
The power of artifacts in cubes, especially early on in the game, is very, very high. A couple of those are things like Vandal Blast and Inkotchu. I'm playing Vandal Blast at the moment. That's good and also very much live later in the game because you can often get a 2 or 3 for 1 with it.
Then Nature's Claim.
Nature's Claim is another one that's played quite a lot. It's not so much for an aggro card, giving your opponent 20% extra life, but certainly in other archetype, it's maybe one of the best instant speed answers there is, I think.
And it plays with what we're saying. It's important sometimes that your answers, interactive cards are cheap.
Yeah.
You don't want to spend your whole turn. And sometimes you can't afford to wait. That's also that. I think we're going to say the same, is that regarding artifact and enchantment hate, there are two ways to look at it. You can either get your value plays, like Inkotchu turn 5, or Viridian Shaman turn 3. I know people used to play Dismantling Blow and what's the other card from Apocalypse? Orim's
Thunder.
Yeah, that one.
Red white kicker. Yeah.
With the thought that you'd rather have value disenchants than
one for one
efficient answers, but I think that sometimes you need either the cheap interaction or the fast interaction. You really want to kill a Soul Ring turn 1 or two if you're able to.
I think recently people have been going a little bit, and this is true of my own cube, people have been going a little bit towards a sort of half and half ratio. Because it used to be very much you would see all of the artifact killing would be on Sex Monkeys and Viridian Shaman, Wicker Bow Elder and the things like that. And I think it's good to have a mix of non-creature effects that are a bit faster, maybe can be instant speed just to try and deal with those things.
Your disenchant, your naturalize, but this is a talk for another day. But yeah, even at one, it's important sometimes.
Of course, Pithing Needle is another one-mana answer to some of those problem cards as well.
Yeah.
And that's always a card I'm never unhappy to main deck, actually.
One thing, that's one important thing you mentioned is the split between creature-based answers to artifacts and enchantments and spell-based answers. So I think this in particular illustrates the duality between one mana creatures and one mana spells. Most of the time what you're looking for in your one mana creatures is either aggression or something that impacts the game a lot. And what you're looking for in your one mana spells is versatility and power.
Utility,
yeah, that's the word I was missing.
Yeah.
Does this sound a good way to summarize it?
Yes, that's actually it, I think.
Yeah.
The point we were making.
This line will be blurred a little bit when we discuss 2 and 3 and 4 drops, I assume.
I think it's most true for 1 drops, as you say, because the 1 drop spells we run are very much utility effects. Most of the time, they sometimes have a specialized role.
Mm-hmm.
And the creatures are doing a very, very important job being under the shields up, sort of shields down phase, and getting your 2 power presence on the table a lot of the time, or getting your 1 mana ramp spell. So they I think you're correct that they do serve a very different purpose. But as you go up the curve, then it's certainly in the mid level of the curve. I think you'll find there'll be more of a difference between spells and creatures again when you get to the high mana costs.
Yeah.
But in the middle of the curve, there's going to be more of a blurred line, I think, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And one thing we didn't mention is, I think it's important to mention, is a tapped land is also a very, you can think, I mean, we touched on this, we mentioned this previously, I think, but whenever you play a tapped land, it's sort of a one drop as well.
In terms of your curve.
It's like you're paying one mana to play that land.
It is.
Yes.
You know? And this is particularly important here because if you listen to the whole episode, we talked about of aggressive creatures in white, black, and red. We talked a lot about mana elves in green. I mean, some people try to support aggressive decks in green as well.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, it's certainly doable. There's some very, very good aggressive creatures in green. Do you want to give some names?
Let me just get this straight. You put good aggressive and green in the same sentence?
Yeah, green has some very good aggressive creatures.
I'm just joking. This was just a small rub-in. No, people, we mentioned Experiment 1 and stuff like Wolfbitten Captive.
Wild Nakato.
The Captive and Experiment 1 are pretty much good mid-range-y plays as well. In a more mid-range deck, there are good ways to fill your curve in early turns.
Yeah,
but
it is possible to support green more wholeheartedly with, you know, aggro only one drops with things like Jungle Line, I suppose. It can be done.
Wild Dogs,
yes. Yeah, that sort of thing. But they tend to be
I'm not a fan.
Sorry. They tend to be lacking relative to the creatures in other colours, you know.
No, but it's all jokes aside and all bias aside, it's a good way to ensure that you have enough aggressive decks in your cube is to give further support to your aggressive decks in green by using those types of cards. I know some people don't play Wild Nakato because they say they don't really support green aggro decks, and that's fine. And stuff like Curd Ape and Loam Lion.
Yeah,
these are aggressive one drops as well.
Yeah.
They sort of require you to play green, and all bias aside, it's a matter of personal preference, and it's a very efficient way to ensure you have enough aggro drafters in your table.
Yes, that's actually the point, really.
Yeah.
About those early drops, that you really want to have aggro drafters at your table.
Yeah.
I think it's a valid point, actually, especially as if you do increase the green aggro support a little more, you get access to some more color-intensive, very, very good green aggro cards like Strangleroot Geist at 2.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Ilk, so, you know, there are some upsides to that sort of perspective as well.
But for the sake of the argument, let's just assume that green one-drops are mostly mana creatures.
Yeah.
It does not make too much of a difference if they're not. But you have your aggressive creatures in white, red, and black, or yes, you tend to, because I know some people don't support the aggressive black creatures at all.
That is the case, unfortunately.
You have a split between mana creatures and more aggressive creatures in green, and you can just move up and down this scale. In blue, notice that we talked about some cantrips, we talked about some Enclave Cryptologists, Delver of Secrets, but blue is actually the prime place to play attack. It's blue-based decks are the most likely to want to play a tapped land turn one. It's their turn one play, and it's a strong one. You play your Fairy Conclave, your Sheldock Isle, your Tri Land, your Vivid Land, your
Celestial Colonnade,
Creeping Carpet. Exactly. Celestial Colonnade. Those are pretty strong one drops for the blue deck in some way.
And seeing as blue has so few true one drops, there's a very little opportunity cost there.
Exactly. That was my point.
You don't miss out on much, and you can still play a Gataxian Probe or counter someone else's thing with a Mental Misstep, so that's nice.
Yeah, and you can play your Ponder or your Preordain, and you're assuming you have a tap land.
There are a few plays remain, but a Mox or something.
It's funny that you can look at the, just by looking at the one drops the cube plays, you can get a sense of what the cube designer is trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty cool.
I think there's, of course, in the smattering of utility one drops that are just so good that you have to play them, like Mother of Runes, Goblin Welder is really fun.
Oh yeah, and Greater Gargadon.
Gargadon would be an episode on his own. It's such a weird card.
And yes, it's a one drop. It's not a 10 drop.
I don't think I've ever hot cast it.
I think I did once, but it was in a train wreck of a deck. So
wouldn't surprise me. I mean, it could happen. That's a very, very weird card, but it's one of the things that every time I sort of think it's kind of a bit cute, I play it early on turn one, and then your opponent has to play around a potential 9 power haste creature for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
You know, by sacking all your land, so it's deceptively good.
Yeah.
I don't know if I was cubing when Time Spiral came out, but I'm sure at the time people would have probably dismissed it quite quickly and then maybe given it a second look and thought, wow, this is cool.
Yeah, so I guess this is a wrap for today. Have we talked everything? Let's look at our very thorough script for the episode. But yeah, I think we mentioned this was a very experimental episode. We could really use your feedback on this, and we can try to adjust for the rest of the series. The plan is to do, we have 6 more episodes scheduled for this series at some point in the future, for 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 or more drops.
Yeah.
And we really would really appreciate your feedback on this. I mean, if you think it was not worth it, we can just skip this series. Because, like we said previously, we have lots of cool episodes in the pipeline. But I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think it's been very entertaining. It's a new way to discuss things in the cube rather than doing a color-centric approach. I think it's been fun. I hope people enjoy it.
Yeah, so for Liam and Arthur, this was Pedro, and see you next time.
See you guys next time.
Yeah, happy cubing. See you next time. Hello, everyone. My name's Liam, and I'm here with my co-host. Shall I start that again? I said podcast.
Yeah, sure.
That is a bleeper. Why not? Why not? People love that. Top quality production that we're working on here. Right. Tune in next week, everyone. Right. Start again. Hello, everyone. My name's Liam, and I'm here with my co-host.